This interview with Venerable Dhammadipa took place on January 30th, 2019 in Boulder, Colorado. It contains five segments. In segment one, he touches on the roots of Tathagatagarbha and his position on the subject. In segment two, he discusses the scripture, Awakening of Faith in the Mahayana. In the third segment, he talks about Yogacara, Shamatha and Vipassana meditation, and Tathagatagarbha as skillful means. The fourth segment covers the nature of the mind in Yogacara. And finally, in the fifth and last segment, he reflects on how he came to study the Yogacara tradition.
Well, Sandinirmochana Sutra, as you may know, is a kind of a base for the whole of the Yogacara tradition. Mm-hmm. And in Yogacara tradition, we have a kind of two traditions. One is based on the alaya, the other is based on what you may call the consciousness, the super mundane consciousness. So mundane consciousness and super mundane consciousness. Mm. The super mundane consciousness links us to the Buddha nature, as you call it. Mm. In Chinese tradition, there is a very important text which I have translated into Czech also, which is attributed to Ashvaghosha, mm-hmm. the Mahayana Sharanutpada Shastra, the Awakening of Faith in Mahayana. Mm-hmm. And this is very interesting text for this Tathagatagarbha mm-hmm. tradition. And in China, it is like the most widely studied text, especially in the Zen tradition. Mm-hmm. You may say that Zen tradition is also the Tathagatagarbha tradition. And you may also say that most of Chinese tradition is connected to the idea of Tathagatagarbha. Mm-hmm. But from the point of view of Theravada, of course, you may find roots for Madhyamika, for Yogacara, but you will hardly find anything on the Tathagatagarbha. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. So the Chinese Buddhists may not find any difficulty in accepting the Tathagatagarbha idea, mm-hmm. but you will find difficulty in convincing the Theravada Buddhists that this teaching is to be traced back to the Buddha himself. Mm-hmm.
Is that because it's not found in the Nikayas? It's not.
You don't find any mm-hmm. clear indication of that in the Nikaya. Mm-hmm. Maybe only in the Vinaya. Mm-hmm. There is a famous story that Buddha, after his enlightenment, he sees all the beings as lotus flowers mm. deeply merged in the mat. Mm. This story is there in the Vinaya. Mm-hmm. And this may be also the root for this tradition. Mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. else are these lotus flowers and the Tathagatagarbha, of course.
Right. Right. Yeah. Do you find it an interesting idea, the idea of Buddha nature or Tathagatagarbha?
Well, if As taught in the Lankavatara Sutra, if you consider it to be a skillful means, then no one should have any problem with that. Mm-hmm. But if you consider it to be like the definitive truth mm-hmm. of Buddhism mm-hmm. as the substance, mm-hmm. then I will have difficulty with that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because it contradicts the teachings on emptiness, or could you explain that a little more?
Well, if you study Buddhism, you are not likely to accept the idea of any essence whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Finally, it is the same in Madhyamika, Yogacara. Mm-hmm. However you explain mm-hmm. the basic idea of Buddhism is the essencelessness. Mm. Mm-hmm. And learning Buddhism is learning essencelessness. Essencelessness is selflessness. And normally, however you explain Buddhism, the principal idea of all genuine traditions is the selflessness. Where you find selflessness, there is Buddhism. If you talk about the self, then it is suspicious. But you can, of course, ground it. You can make the explanation like Lankavatara Sutta, that it is skillful means. Then we have no problem with that, of course. Because the Indian tradition of the Upanishads and so on is definitely concerned with the searching for the self. And in Buddhism, even in Dhammapada, you find verses that the meaning of Buddhism is searching for the true self. It is there. The self is the master of the self. Where else would you find the self? The famous verses of Dhammapada. You can explain it in this way. There is a very important sutra for the Yogacara tradition also, the great Mahayana Nirvana Sutra, Tapan Nyepanji. It also teaches the permanence, happiness, self, and purity, the exact opposites. But it does not teach directly the Tathagata Gaudiya idea.
But that teaching you would accept as, I don't want to get absurdly technical, but do you accept that text as one of the texts that teaches?
It is very important text for the Yogacara tradition. The main disciple of Xuanzang, Kuiji, he advises all to read the Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra and the Great Nirvana Sutra. They are the two sutras which are, say, especially to be studied for understanding Yogacara.
And those two seem to have some links with, or at least in other traditions, they point to those sutras as being sources for Tathagatagarbha teachings.
Indirectly, yes, but not directly.
Not directly, yeah. Interesting. Since we're talking about the waking of faith, could you explain a little bit more about the waking of faith itself, or maybe pick what you think is the most important section of it?
Awakening of faith is why people believe that it's written by a Chinese monk. It perfectly fits into Taoist background. And actually Taoism is also Tathagata Gaudiya in a way. It's very close to Tathagata Gaudiya, therefore the Taoists, they have no problem with Tathagata Gaudiya at all. On the contrary. And as you may know, this work was first translated by the Christian missionaries in China, Timothy something. And he has no problem to identify the Tathagata Gaudiya with God and soul and so on. It's no problem for him. So he uses this, that's how he understood it. So it's very easy to accept Tathagata Gaudiya for taste thinkers. But as we all know, the early Buddhism is very much opposed to theistic vision. Later it changes. Finally, they have the very late Buddhism has a concept of Adi Buddha, which is no taste would have any problem with that. Just the name is different. So the awakening of faith in Mahayana, Ashwagosha shows that actually in our experience, which is mind, all experience of sentient beings is Mahayana, and the Mahayana is a mind, because everything is contained in the mind. This is important, and the mind has the aspect of the Dharma and the meaning. And the meaning of Mahayana is great substance, which you can, great characteristics and great use. Then you can connect it with the three bodies. The substance is the Dharmakaya, the characteristic is the Sambhogakaya, and the use is the Nirmanakaya. So even so, it does not speak about these three bodies, it's very easy to connect this.
What then was the third one? I'm sorry, youth?
The use, utility?
Use utility. The karya, you can translate it as use or function. Maybe function would be better translation. So,
yeah, that makes sense.
Then, according to this treatise, the alaya is the, has two aspects, the aspect of nirvana and the non-arising and non-ceasing, and the aspect of samsara, the arising and ceasing. Then the aspect of non-arising, which is suchness, it is non-dualistic, of course. You cannot talk about it. All that you talk about it, here we come to Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra, is only imposed on reality. This is very important idea of Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra. All, actually, the reality itself is unseizable, unspeakable. But all that are words is just imposed on reality. And we have to, without the words, we cannot study. We need the concepts, but we should be aware that the reality itself is non-established. This is also the teaching of the Pragyaparamita. So whatever you establish is only, say, a skillful means. This is very important also for understanding Tathagata Garbha. So we can only establish skillful means, we can never establish the reality, because it is anirvachaniya, it is ungraspable, it is unthinkable, it is... So then you have the reality you can express with words, and you have a reality which is unspeakable. This is another division. And all that you can speak about is actually not established. It is only skillful means. And as a skillful means, then you have the you have the alaya. The alaya is where the nirvanic aspect and the samsaric aspect of consciousness meet in one. And then this there is a concept of, say, original enlightenment. You actually start practicing. This brings us again to Tathagata Garbha. You start practicing by actually contemplating the original enlightenment. So through understanding the original enlightenment, you go into the what he calls the process of enlightening. And this process of enlightening then brings you to the ultimate enlightenment. Then he explains this process of enlightening from many different aspects. First, the development of consciousness. So if you have karmic consciousness, it all starts with karmic consciousness, which is active consciousness. If you have active consciousness, you have evolving consciousness. Because of evolving consciousness, you have the outer reality, or you have the outer aspect. According to Yogacara, all worldly consciousness has the aspect of self-witnessing, Svasamviti, which Madhyamika denies, and you have the aspect of the subjective and objective. So all this comes from the karmic consciousness. And karmic consciousness is where everything starts. And to the beginning of karmic consciousness, only the Buddha can come. Vasubandhu is teaching that only the Buddha can completely understand the mind only. No one else than Buddha. But the practice of awakening is coming back to the beginning. To the beginning means arising. Arising of what? Arising of karmic consciousness. When karmic consciousness is there, there is the subjective aspect and objective aspect. And from the objective aspect is the differentiation. From the differentiation is a continuity. From continuity you have concepts and names. From concepts and names you have clinging consciousness. From clinging consciousness you have the karma-producing consciousness. From the karma-producing consciousness you have the bondage. And then he explains again the way back from bondage to the beginning. So the process of enlightenment is to going back to the beginning. And he connects it with the four characteristics of the compounded. It is arising, then it is duration, it is change, and it is cessation. So you start with a cessation. Again, process of enlightenment, you start with a cessation. When the evil arises in mind, you leave it. So he calls it the enlightenment like non-enlightenment, because there is still the self. Then next is understanding of the change. And this is the practice understanding of the two, lower vehicles, the vehicle of disciples and the vehicle of the Pratyeka Buddhas. And then the understanding of the non-realized bodhisattvas. Then when one becomes a realized bodhisattva, he does not contemplate the change anymore, but he contemplates the duration. That means he is a realized bodhisattva, he has attained the bhumi. Then when he contemplates, of course, the duration as being something real, then he can go to the beginning, which actually is beyond duration. So it is the privilege of the Buddha to go to the very beginning. And you go, then he connects it with the practice of the bodhisattvas, practice of the faith. According to him, the faith, that's why it is called the rising of the face in Mahayana. The faith is the most important practice. And through the faith, because the Tathagatagarbha you cannot experience, you can only experience by faith. Right? That's why it's called the awakening of faith in Mahayana. So through the faith, then you can attain even according to him, the eight, you can perform the eight deeds of the Buddha due to the faith. Then if you realize the faith, then you practice according to understanding, then it's still higher practice. And finally, through understanding, you go to the highest practice, the realization of the understanding. And the most important part of this sutra is explaining that reality is one. So in this one reality, there is suchness, or suchness is the cause, and ignorance is the condition. So our experience is cause and conditions, you explain like that. The cause is the suchness, and the condition is the ignorance. So when the ignorance, it perfumes the mind, so then arise the conceptual thinking, or vikalpa. And then the vikalpa again perfumes the ignorance. So due to that you start grasping to the outer objects through the further perfumation of this conceptual thinking through ignorance, you start grasping to the outer objects, and again the ignorance is perfumed more and more. But on the other hand, if the suchness perfumes ignorance, then this conceptual thinking becomes less, and the idea of the real outer worlds disappears finally. That's how you go back to suchness. So the main practice is actually the non-conceptual samadhi. And so this is how it is connected with Zen. Actually, the Zen practice is nothing but the non-conceptual samadhi.
And is that treated as a way of cultivating faith? Is that a way, like non-conceptual samadhi, or strive for it as a way to cultivate faith?
Well, actually, the main practice is to stop thinking.
Okay.
That's how it's connected to Mahayana, especially to Zen tradition. When you stop thinking, you are, so to say, separated from the nature of the mind. So this is a main practice. But when you're not separated from the nature of the mind, then you can actually practice the vipassana. And through the practice of vipassana, you give rise to the great compassion. So the shamatha is non-thinking, and the vipassana is a great compassion. This is the teaching of this.
I guess maybe you could explain to us a little bit more about Yogacara and the key Yogacara texts for those of us who don't.
Well, Yogacara is a synonym of Chittamatrata or Vigyaptimatrata. And as the name itself says, it has to do with yoga, the conduct of yoga. And it is, in my little understanding, it is definitely related to the Indian tradition of yoga. It is not by chance. Now, having been trained in the Theravada tradition, the Theravada teachers, even those who are quite open, they are very skeptical of yoga tradition, and they want to separate themselves from the Indian yoga tradition. But I believe that Buddhism is directly linked to this tradition. It existed before Buddha and after Buddha, and Buddha has influenced yoga, and yoga has influenced Buddha for sure. And you will find many, many ideas in Yogacara Bhumishastra, or in the Yogacara works related directly to the Patanjali Yoga Sutras.
Mm-hmm.
And this has not, as far as I know, has not been really studied in detail yet. Mm-hmm. But there are many, many places which have, you can find clear correspondence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Yogacara Bhumi Shastra then is a work which explains kind of equipment you need to practice shamatha and vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
In the Pragyaparamita Sutra, shamatha vipassana is like compared to the moon and the sun. Hmm? We need the light in the mind to study Buddhism. And that light is shamatha vipassana. Hmm? Mm-hmm. So all practices of Buddhism are in a way related to shamatha and vipassana.
Mm.
And the great contribution to understanding of Buddhism, of Yogacara, is to bring shamatha and vipassana to the mind.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
The shamatha and vipassana is nothing but the investigation of the nature of the mind. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And this brings us to the Tathagata Garbha again.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, the Tathagata Garbha is nothing but the skillful means for investigating the mind.
Mm-hmm. When they talk about the nature of mind, there's often this word that comes up, luminosity, or there's sometimes an attempt to describe that nature.
Yogacara Bhumi Shastra does not talk much about, as you know, the Pragyaparamita Shastras do not talk much about luminosity.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about the original purity of the mind. You
mm-hmm.
have it there also, the original enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Is the understanding of original enlightenment is the beginning of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't speak of luminosity.
And how do they describe mind in that sense, or the nature of mind? Simply as emptiness, or
the nature of the mind is ungraspable.
Mm-hmm.
So the light is just skillful means for understanding the ungraspable, but the ungraspable is the truth, not
mm-hmm.
the light.
Hmm? Right.
If you take the light as a truth, then mm-hmm. you have something you can hold to.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not the teaching of Pragyaparamita, which is the base of whole Mahayana.
Mm-hmm.
Without Pragyaparamita, no Mahayana.
Mm-hmm.
The Pragyaparamita is the mother of Mahayana.
Mm-hmm.
So if you hold to the light, you are in a way rejecting the teachings of the Pragyaparamita.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, Marcus, I think I don't like the translation luminosity. I think it's a mistake.
Yeah, okay. Explain.
Because
yeah.
Sala is just clarity, so it's
clarity.
Not a thing. It's
clarity
just
is all right.
Spaciousness that allows
yeah.
consciousness to cognize.
Yeah.
It's not like light emanating.
No, of course.
It's not radiation, luminosity, or anything.
No.
I think
yeah,
like that
old,
really
specific.
Has changed. Because of that word in English being used, it's gotten very confusing.
But the key thing is that there's a quality at all,
right.
Which is what is upsetting in a way to Madhyamaka, right?
Yes.
You can't attribute anything to the nature
right.
of mind. As soon as any...
Sure, yeah.
So
yeah,
the question, I guess...
There is a sense that you could cognize something, which is the clarity.
Mm.
Actually, in this... the main idea of this sutra, of this shastra, and of course of the Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra is the practice is a practice of prashrabdi.
Hmm?
Prashrabdi is the opposite of daushtulya, which means grossness. So the practice, you will find this also in Theravada Sutras. This is very genuine tradition. The practice of meditation, shamatha vipassana, is a practice of prashrabdi, which you may translate as clarity and relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it is the opposite of grossness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you According to Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra, you, strictly speaking, you cannot practice shamatha and vipassana unless you have attained the state of clarity and relaxation. Mm-hmm. But they don't speak about any light, no.
Yeah. But do they speak about anything beyond saying, don't try to describe it? Is there any, so the question would be, how is there Buddha qualities, or how does Buddha manifest if the nature of mind and Dharmakaya and so on is just nothing at all?
Actually, this suchness has the aspect of, this is explained very clearly, has a suchness of emptiness and non-emptiness. Mm. This is especially clearly explained in the Mahayana Shraddhotpada Shastra. So, if you explain emptiness, it is not complete. If you explain non-emptiness, it is not complete. You have to explain the two aspects of emptiness and non-emptiness. And the aspect of emptiness is not separated from the infinite virtues of the suchness. And so this is
like Buddha nature.
this is a teaching of the Diamond Sutra and so on, which is
interesting.
The suchness has this infinite virtues, not a person. It is very important to understand.
Is it, that's interesting.
What is non-emptiness in Sanskrit?
This is in Chinese, so they kung po kung.
Oh, that isn't the there is a Sanskrit term or not?
Ashunya.
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 Wow, okay.
So it's not that each being has Buddha nature, it's that everything's suchness anyway, and suchness has immeasurable qualities.
In the Buddhist tradition.
Sorry.
In the Buddhist tradition, it completely is to be related to that. You will find the suchness as a worldly aspect and the supramundane aspect. The worldly aspect is like the solidity of the earth or the receiving of the sensations. These are the worldly aspect of suchness. It is like this. In Pali, it is called sadisa. That means similar to this. This is very significant word for where you can trace a suchness in Pali tradition. Sadisa means, sadrisha means similar to that. Similar to that, to what? Similar to the ultimate reality. So this solidity of the earth or the fluidity of the water or the heat and coolness of the fire, they are similar to that. And this is where this Mahayana philosophy finds traces in the Agamas. That means you have the suchness in the relative sense and you have the suchness in the ultimate sense. And these two suchnesses, they actually present the whole of the reality. So in the Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra, as long as you are not enlightened, you only know the differentiated and non-differentiated images in the mind. When you become enlightened, you know the worldly reality, which is called Yavat Bhavikata, as long as one can go. That means five aggregates, 12 ayatanas, 18 dhatus, dependent origination. This is as far as you can go in the world. And then the yathabhavikata, the aspect of suchness of this, which is on one hand samsaric and which is on one hand the ultimate. Or samsaric, you won't call it samsaric, it's a relative. The relative has the say, worldly aspect and has the ultimate aspect. So this is how you can put these things all together.
Mm-hmm. The two truths, basically, yeah. Uh-huh. That's really interesting to me.
In Yogacara, most important is this third aspect, parikalpita, in which we live. Due to that, we don't understand the nature of dependent origination. Yeah. This is a pure Yogacara.
The three natures. Does that appear in these other texts? Does the three natures kind of thing appear in Awakening of Faith?
In Yogacara scriptures, everywhere you will find it.
Mm-hmm.
We are all subjected to parikalpita. This is our samsara.
Mm.
So by, say, removing the parikalpita from the paratantara, you attain the parinishpana, the ultimate reality. And this is based also for meditation, because the most important is shamatha, finally. Shamatha is defined in Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra as finally the state without object, the mind.
So with all of your experience in the Theravada tradition, what led you to spend a lot of time with the Yogacara tradition?
Actually, I have studied Chinese, so I was kind of programmed to read the Chinese text. Mm. And once you know the Chinese text, you become not, some ideas of Theravada are not to say. It's not complete. It's very useful, but not complete. So when one studies Yogacara, Madhyamika, one gets a complete picture. But in Theravada, it's still, it's very, very useful, and it's a great tradition, living tradition. It has a very perfect system of discipline, without which we cannot really understand Buddhism. But still, it has this dualistic approach, which is there, no doubt. And once you have studied the this Yogacara, so the non-dualistic approach and its advantages become very, very clear. Of course, the non-dualistic approach is best for meditation. But it's because it is very deep, it's also very easy to misunderstand. And most of us, including myself, we always make mistakes, thinking we are doing some bodhisattva. But actually, it is not so easy to be a bodhisattva. So this Theravada tradition is easy to understand, easy to practice. But in some way, if you know other things, it's not complete. So it's very good to see the other side also.
And do you consider Madhyamaka and Yogacara?
They are complementary, no doubt. Actually, Tibetan Buddhism, from the early times, Sangharakshita and Kamalasila, they combine them together. The Yogacara explained the worldly reality for them, and the Madhyamika, the ultimate.
Do you see a contemporary Buddhism doing the same kind of thing?
Yes, I believe there is no problem. Like, Abhisamaya Alankara is attributed to Maitreya, and it's considered to be Madhyamika text also. And great teachers of Abhidharma, like Sthiramati, they comment on Nagarjuna also. They have no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And Sthiramati is the indirectly disciple of Asanga, no?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So the sort of what we would call the five dharmas of Maitreya, the five texts, the main texts of Maitreya, Asanga, or Sthiramati, depending, are those similarly accepted in Chinese traditions?
They are, yes. Mm-hmm. This tradition is well preserved in China. Mm-hmm. But they don't have like Madhyamika Prasangika and so on.
Mm.
It came and these differentiations and some logical text, it came only in modern times as translations from Tibetan.
Mm-hmm.
Even Madhyamaka Avatara and the Chandrakirti's commentary to the Mula Madhyamika Karikas, it's these modern translations like in English or in French or Czech.
Mm. Mm. Oh wow, so Chandrakirti was never fundamental there?
No. And in Tibetan Buddhism, he is the most important interpreter of. In Chinese traditions, they don't distinguish between Svatantrika and the Prasangika. They just speak of Madhyamika, Nagarjuna's. They have a school of three treatises, Jizang, and they never distinguish Svatantrika, Prasangika.
That's probably good.
Yeah.
It's too many distinctions.
Is there a strong culture of debate, Madhyamika debate?
Is there a strong culture of debate in the Chinese tradition?
No, the Chinese, they are more practical. They don't like too much get involved in discussions and so on. They want to know what it is good for. All Chinese philosophy is based on the harmony of the ideal and the use. The ideal has to have some use. If it does not have a use, the Chinese won't go for it.
Yeah.